CliffCentral.com.
CliffCentral.com on a Friday morning. Lots of things to get to, lots of interesting people to talk to, and most importantly, your chance to have your say, as always, on the show, either by dropping us a comment, which you can do right now on YouTube Live. We get all of those comments, and we will respond to them immediately, or you can message us on 0797482090. It also pops up in the screen in front of me. Whatever you prefer. Hopefully, you've got some nice plans for the weekend, and don't be disturbed by all this nonsense about a cold front. Just get on with it. Live your life. What the hell's the weather going to make a difference? Come on. What are you, 10? Need to worry about the weather.
Amen.
Seriously, how dumb is that? All right. So I'm a year older as of yesterday, and I'm feeling pretty good about it. So maybe I've turned the corner in terms of having this issue with birthdays. Because yesterday I had a properly happy day. The whole day was just great. Didn't bother me.
That's awesome.
I didn't get into my usual funk about, getting old, blah, blah, blah. Everything made me happy. People were very nice. I think I'm over it. I really do. I think that's a good thing. So
being the, you know, what does Leanne always say? I'm a strange person. Is that for me, I always think about how do I keep myself. Because I think aging is like a mindset, right? Like, I want to keep myself healthy and always like cooking on the physical front, you know, just so my biological clock can stay sort of, you know, lower. Do you ever think about yourself being old, or do you think you're just going to like keep doing new stuff to keep yourself young?
I mentioned this earlier when Ben and I last had a conversation. We both decided we want to get to a good 50 and 60. You know, you want to get to a 50 or 60 year old age where you are in good shape. You are not some stinky, smelly, fat old man. You are still a prize. You've made some money. There are lots of women who will find you attractive at that age, and you can do well. You can enjoy a really good life at 50 or 60 if you're healthy and if you look after yourself. And that's kind of what I'm aiming at. So I think that's very much in the focus at the moment.
I'm going for skin tags and carbuncles.
Oh, thanks a lot. Is that what you expect me to have? Cool. Is that what you're going for me?
When I lift my arm, you'll see a different collection of.
Oh God! Oh no, that is so revolting. I'd rather be eaten by one of those whale things than comprehend skin tags and carbuncles. Jesus.
No, it's very inspiring to hear you guys speak like that.
Yeah.
And I think one of my favorite places at the moment, TikTok, there's so many men and women in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s who have channels or accounts and are just winning at them. And you see each of them make a video about some comment they received from someone who's a teenager or in their 20s saying this isn't the platform for you, get off.
Yeah.
In the meantime, these people are making such amazing content. And it's inspiring to see. It's because you get to that age where you think, oh, my life's almost over.
Well, let me tell you, if there's any marker of youth, any indication that you're actually youthful, it is that you're on TikTok. That's something I can't even do that. So congratulations to those people, whoever they are. I do see that there are, you know, like the fitness channels on YouTube and so on of these guys who are like 50, 60, 70 even. And they do, they do like exercise every day, and they're in great shape, and they eat well, and they enjoy their lives, and they see a lot of their friends, and, you know, some of them have got really, really lovely families, and they've made their money. Like, a man only really becomes, I suppose, desirable when he's also got, like some life experience and some wisdom and some all round, you know, general kind of knowledge about how the world works. There's nothing worse for a woman. I'm speculating here, obviously. I've never been a woman, and not in this life anyway. But I can't imagine a woman being a woman attracted to a man who's just not very worldly or doesn't know stuff and can't do basic things, doesn't have any ordinary skills in the world. I think that must be a very off-putting thing for women. Am I right, Leanne?
Hugely. I mean, I look at my dad now. He is He's 60s. Oh, I don't know. He's in his mid-60s, I think.
Okay.
And he's still cycling. He goes to yoga. He has had to learn how to cook because of my mom's situation. I went to him for dinner last night. He made delicious cottage pie, and he's making pasta bakes, and he went to cooking school. He's well-read. He leans towards the Buddhist way of living life. And he just has a wealth of philosophical background and information. That's the kind of person that you're looking for.
Yeah.
Not somebody who you have to pick their outfit for them and out the vegetables from their food.
I know at least 2 or 3 80-year-olds, and 80 is old, you know. I mean, by any stretch, you could say age is just a number, but 80 is a long time to be on Earth. And we were talking about Charlie Watts from the Rolling Stones, who died this week. Jacob Zuma's 79. He's almost 80. In fact, John Burks, who you know is one of the people in radio who I've had a long relationship with and who's a man who I respect enormously. Burks, he turned 80 on the 24th of August, which was 2 days before my birthday. And 80, to think about 80, that's old in anyone's mind. But there are 80-year-olds, there's good 80 and there's a bad 80. And a good 80 is still, you know, there's plenty of reasons, especially if you've lived life and you know a little bit about things and, you know, you're not a loser or in terrible condition. I think 80 can be a very profound way to kind of round off a good life. And by that, I don't just mean the age, obviously. But I mean, a good 80 could be a great way to smooth over the cracks, polish up a life, have a whole lot of wisdom in your bag. And you can say and do interesting things still at 80, still experience that last little bit that you haven't had the chance to in the rest of your life. I think once you get to 90, it starts becoming, you know, like the chances of you having a comfortable, happy life at 90 are pretty slim. Pumi's grandmother died at 95 this week too. That's an incredible innings, but I don't know that by 90 everything's working optimally. I think 80 is pushing it. If you get to the end of your 80s, you've done well. You know, congratulate yourself on that. And we are living longer. We are healthier. Medicine is advancing. All of that stuff is great. But there's certain realities that kick in at a very old age that you just can't avoid. But I'm looking forward to it, man. I'm feeling good.
Good for you, man. And the reality is, and it's there's just no way around it. What you do in your 30s and 40s will determine the quality of your life post that, right? A neuroscience sort of like somebody I really respect says to me that whatever you are at 40, and don't take out the anomalies. You know, Ben is an anomaly, but whatever you are at 40, that is the body you have best of your life. Because she was trying to explain it to me, like the idiot that I am in terms of the science of it, was that at 40 almost you calcify. And we always hear of people becoming sort of rigid and stuck in their ways. And the science led her, and I'm not saying this because I don't really understand the science, but she said, at 40, that's what you are now. So you must, and she was trying to get me to see, you must invest in your 30s and your 40s, you compound, and that's what your life's going to be. So it's brutal. If you don't invest in the health and the right habits and whatever, it's going to be a slog to try and change at 50. So good for you.
Okay,
yeah. I'm happy that you had a great day, man.
So if I can take even now, I'd be happy to look like this for, you know, or have this kind of body. And even if this calcifies now, I'm happy with this. Like, I've made peace with that. You know, I used to complain about, I could look like an athlete. No, I'm never going to be that guy. But I would like to keep up the fitness and maybe just get a little bit more in shape. I think that's doable with just choosing the right foods. But I don't want to turn this into discussion of me. I think there are lots of people who wake up every day thinking about this stuff. The other thing, of course, that comes into it is very, very few people are rich in their 20s and 30s. You know, you only really start to make and understand money, I think, by your 40s, 50s, and perhaps even for some people, your 60s. And that's great. It means I got that to look forward to, which is also exciting. And, yeah. You know, if I can be a good 60, then I can find some girl who's half my age and make lovely children with her, and she can worry about them because I'll be a dribbling wreck. So that's another exciting thing I can do. Anyway, work hard and save your money, says Red Robin. And when you are old, you'll be able to buy the things only the young can enjoy. Mm-hmm. And just
it's all a bit of the wrong way around, isn't it? Yeah, it's that, like that whole theory of we should have been born old and then die young.
Well, here's a great story, because you know, we talk about age being just a number, but there's apparently a surfer. This is a great story that's just come in now. This guy is still surfing at 99 years old. And he's in great condition, loves his life. He's out there doing interesting things every day. 99 and surfing. My God, that's great.
Yeah, we actually got a comment.
Look at this, Michael.
Yeah, there we go. That's amazing that he's 99 and started surfing at 96.
Jesus, that's amazing. That's rich.
Swims over a kilometer in a day.
Well, Tracy says, my mom's neighbor is 94. He still plays tennis every week, still drives himself to the shops. He lives alone, and during lockdown, he showed my mom how to use Uber Eats. You see? That's great. That's awesome. That's so great. I love it. All right, so there we go. That's the discussion there. I do want to get to Sean. I want to talk to Sean because he has been living in New Zealand for a while, and I've got lots of friends who live in New Zealand, as I said earlier, and most of them are very happy that they've made the move, and I'm delighted for them. I really am. But we've been knocking New Zealand because they've got this very strict lockdown at the moment. And Jacinda Ardern and her government have basically said to people, you've got to be in your bubble and you can't talk to anyone else. And it's hugely unpopular in some parts of New Zealand and Australia. But the rest of the world is now starting to talk about this, and it's embarrassing for them because people have this idea in their head of what sort of people Australians in particular are. And it doesn't match up with this extremely supplicant population. You know, the people there are just, they'll do whatever is required and they'll listen to whatever the government tells them to do. And this jars with people because they think, well, Australians, these tough, rough, kind of outback pioneering sort of people who can do anything. Turns out they're not. They're really actually just quite compliant, quite well-behaved, quite ordinary folks. So we're going to find out from a South African who's been living in New Zealand for a while. He actually sent me this email, and that's why I decided to get him on the show. He's agreed, thank God. He says he comes from Durban, met his wife Charlene 20 years ago. We've been married for 17 years and have two kids, a 16-year-old boy, 11-year-old girl. My wife is a primary school teacher, and I'm an electrician. I work as a production manager as well as running a small business.
A Sparky.
I run a small business on the side. We live in a small town called Warkworth, which is in the Auckland district. It's about an hour north of the CBD. Our families are scattered around the world in various countries like the UK, SA, Canada, and Australia. When we decided to move to New Zealand, it was for our concern of being the victims of crime. We've had a few close calls, and we decided it was best to move while we were ahead of the game. We moved to New Zealand in the beginning of 2013 and have only visited South Africa once since then for my brother's wedding back in 2017. So I want to know what's happening in New Zealand. Let's get Sean on here. I don't know why we can't seem to be able to add him.
We're just working on him.
Okay, yeah, cool.
We're working on Sean. Give it a sec. We are working.
No problemo. Leanne, you've been to Australia. I mean, you've got family there as well, right?
Mm-hmm. I do, but I mean, the last time I went there was about 20 years ago.
Oh, okay. You haven't been recently.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, I mean, I think the one thing that struck me was how we went to the Wolof Park, remember?
Yeah, the Wolof Park.
Which is the wildlife in the Wolof Park. And we were being told about all these dangerous animals, like the dingo and all of those.
Yeah.
And when we got there, most of the animals they didn't even need to be in cages because they're so, like, calm.
They're just wandering around?
And, you know, the dingo is really unimpressive when you see it in person. I'd be more scared of a burbul than a dingo. But it was just quite interesting. It was like, you know, a jail with animals with rubber teeth almost. these very scary animals who are in an enclosure where the wall comes up to your knees.
It's like Americans. I mean, they think, you know, there is a cougar in the mountains there, or there is wolves. Wolves are like dogs. Come on. And a cougar is like a domestic cat that's just grown a little bit bigger. We in South Africa know what dangerous animals are. We have lions and leopards and buffalo and a rhinoceros.
Crocodiles
and elephants that can stomp you.
Hippo.
In one. Yeah, I mean, these are, we have all the best animals, all of them. We've got pythons. You know, we've got things that could do some serious damage to you, bullshit Australia and North America.
Yes.
Right?
I don't know if you remember the video a couple of months ago where an American was trail running or hiking or whatever, and they got caught with a cougar, mm-hmm. and they were going all crazy, and he or she was walking backwards. I'm like, hey, just give that little thing a little, what's it, Leanne, what do you call it? Kitty litter or whatever. What do you give them?
Catnip.
Catnip.
Oh. Yeah, give that thing a little catnip, chief. You pop over to South Africa.
Right.
That's nothing. Imagine putting that thing next to a female lion. Forget about, we're not even going to talk about the big guy.
Right.
Just put it next to a lioness. That thing, a lioness would use the cougar as a toothpick.
Hey, Sean.
Play games here, man.
Okay, no, we had Sean and then we lost him. I don't know what happened there.
Just
quickly, a couple of comments while we're waiting for Sean. Zenaid says, the Guinness World Record for planking is held by a 62-year-old, a guy called George Hood. He did planking for 8 hours. God, can you imagine that? Wow. Unbelievable. Sergio says, you've got to look at a guy called Andrew Huberman. It is never too late. Fuck Mobby.
We already spoke about this.
Yeah, we did.
We already spoke about Andrew Huberman. Great podcaster. It's a sort of a neuroscience podcast.
Yeah.
Incredible guy. And I've been on him for a long time. So, Sergio, I'm with you. It's possible, but it's hard.
Calcification is caused by becoming inflexible in your mind. That's exactly right. And here are the seven ages of man, according to Robin, Red Robin. The seven ages of man: spills, drills, thrills, bills, ills, pills, wills.
I like that one.
That's brilliant.
The cougars in Brakpan, according to Zenaid, are the real cougars. forget Brakpan. It used to be like Billy the Bums in Four Ways. That's where all the cougars used to hang out. That's as far as I can remember. Is that place still going?
Billy's, I don't know. Shout out Bob Skinstedt and Robbie Fleck for giving South Africa that whole thing.
Did they do that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they started. Yeah, Bobby.
All right. Okay.
Hilton guy. I mean, no big deal.
Yeah, he was the one who kept sticking his tongue out the whole time, right?
Okay. All right.
All right. So here it is. Sean Kepler is our guest this morning. Hey, Sean, how are you doing, man?
Hey, Gareth. How are you, man?
Good. Sorry we had some problems connecting to you, but we can hear you loud and clear now. So, Sean.
Great stuff.
I read out your email that you sent me, and thank you for doing that. I know we've been knocking New Zealand a little bit, but maybe we just don't understand what's going on over there. First of all, tell us about the lockdown and what's happening with you guys.
Okay, well, lockdown's it's quite strange at the moment. I think old Jacinda Ardern's going to be taking a bit of flack with regards to it.
Mm-hmm.
Currently at the moment, we've gone into week two in Auckland, and I think we currently have about 347 cases. In total, 70 new cases today. But the reality of us coming to an end, it's just not going to happen. We would be in lockdown for a number of weeks before this eventually stopped. So realistically, they need to rethink the way they're going to respond to COVID and what their response is going to be, because it's just not feasible to shut down a whole country for weeks on end.
No, and haven't you guys had a complete ban on travel into and out of New Zealand for the longest time? The only country that's been able to do any kind of, prisoner swap with you has been like Australia, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Generally, there's been 2 weeks quarantine as soon as you come into New Zealand. So 2 weeks inside a managed isolation.
Right.
There was a bubble between Australia and New Zealand, and more than likely, that's where the COVID virus sort of seeped into New Zealand.
And the other thing about New Zealand at the moment that people may or may not know is that a very small percentage of your population, like 1/5 of the people there, have actually been vaccinated. So you guys thought that, or the government there thought, all that we do is we just shut the borders, we'll isolate, and no one will get in with COVID, and no one will go out into the world and bring it back, and that'll save us. But actually, with such a small percentage of the people vaccinated, all that's going to happen is at some point in the next little while, you're going to get a massive outbreak because people are just waiting for it to happen. No immunity's been built up in the community. There are no vaccinations going around. It's a disaster. It's a terrible policy.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's their way of thinking. For a year and now, it sort of works, but it's not going to work 6 months, 18 months, 24 months down the line. It's going to be a complete disaster unless we are stuck inside this bubble continuously.
Yeah, it sounds very messy to me. Let's just move on from that. So you send in your email that you grew up in Durban and you and your wife decided to move to New Zealand. You're in a suburb just north of Auckland. Tell me about what life is like there and how it compares to, say, Durban, which many of our listeners may be more familiar with.
Yeah, it's really strange. It's not a bad place. We currently, I say, about an hour's travel from the CBD. And when I say the CBD, generally most people need to work relatively close to the CBD. So there's a fair amount of commuting. The motorways over here, we've pretty much traveling 80 k's an hour from the Auckland CBD to Warkworth.
Yeah.
Which is a bit of a nightmare. Loads of South Africans living here. Sure, it must be.
Do the New Zealanders like South Africans or the South African population a pain in the backside to them? Be honest.
I think realistically, New Zealanders don't hate immigrants. they despise immigrants, you know what I'm saying? But without immigrants, New Zealand would be nothing. It's not just South Africans moving across. There's there's people from Europe. There's people from India, America, pretty much everywhere moving through to New Zealand. A bit different.
At least in Durban, you used to say mulk and fush and chops, and now in New Zealand, you can say you say mulk and fush and chops. You didn't have to change that so much, right? That can stay the same.
Yeah, well, it's quite strange. It's like I work during the week for a company in close to Auckland CBD, and that company is one of the bigger companies in Auckland, and it's got a staff complement of about 70 odd people. Strangely enough, more than 50% of those people are South African.
Wow! So I can't imagine New Zealanders love it. I mean, you know, if we suddenly had an influx of New Zealanders and they were forming their own communities and kind of doing New Zealander things, we'd probably be like, oh, they're those New Zealanders. I'm sure that they really don't like you South Africans, but there must be some very nice people there too. So the couple of friends I've got there have said to me, one of the friendliest places in the world. It's very clean. It's very safe. You know, people mostly just follow the rules. They don't, they kind of smile and wave at each other. And I did get an email the other day from Crystal, who moved there recently, and she said, there are a couple of problems in New Zealand. What do you think the biggest issues are for New Zealanders? Like, what are they most worried about besides coronavirus at the moment?
It seems as if New Zealand's trying to go down the same sort of path that South Africa's gone down. And you'd think they would have learned from South Africa's sort of mistakes that they've made. And they're trying to come up with this whole sort of scenario where people that were supposedly previously disadvantaged, that they need to be put on a pedestal now and sort of given extra benefits.
Okay, so like you're talking about Pacific Islanders, Maori, indigenous Polynesians, those kinds of people, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So my wife's a school teacher and her main core focus has been to learn Maori and teach majority of her work potentially in Maori, which has been obviously a challenge for her because it's a whole new language.
Right.
But just say, for example, I was looking at an article yesterday. They got some people working with regards to the COVID pandemic. And if you're a Maori or a Pacifica, you're getting paid 2.5 times more than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Just straight off the bat.
Tell me, can you speak any Maori? Do you know any words? Because there's some pretty funny name places, place names in New Zealand. I mean, give me a couple of words in Maori. Come on, let's do an education session.
Coming from Durban, I can barely speak Afrikaans.
We should get your wife on then. She could probably teach us some Maori.
Yeah, if you,
okay,
yeah,
so
my daughter's pretty good as well, yeah.
So what are the routines? I mean, what do you guys do on a daily basis? You know, in South Africa, maybe in Durban, people wake up in the morning, they go to work, they might be out for dinner in the evenings. Maybe they're just with family. They stay at home quite often. What sort of lifestyle do you have? What do you guys do for fun? I know it's a very beautiful country. I mean, you know, New Zealand has an incredible ecological heritage, and there's magnificent natural scenery there. Am I right? Is that part of what you do?
Yeah, you're definitely right. We do explore a lot of stuff. The winters are very dreary. Very little we can do in winter. We do still do quite a bit of walking around and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the weather is, it rains pretty much 8 to 9 months of a year, which is really hard to digest. The summers are like absolutely amazing, but they're very short. So you've got to squeeze a lot into a relatively short time frame.
Yeah, because people forget that New Zealand's quite far south. You know, it's further south than Australia. It's certainly further south than South Africa. So what are you talking about for a short summer? Like a month, 2 months, 3 months?
Three, 4 months.
Okay, it's kind of like here. It's not so bad.
Yeah, so I'm used to Durban. You know, Durban is, you know, like I look back at Durban and I look at all the potential that Durban's got.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was probably one of the most amazing places in the world to live in.
Yeah.
You know, I've been through to Australia, Gold Coast, which they often compare to Durban.
Mm-hmm.
And Durban is just so much better. You know,
really?
It's got so much potential. If you look at right from the Esplanade right through to Umhlanga Rocks, it should be the most prime real estate in the world.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty amazing. I always compare it to Miami. You know, if Durban had more money and if it was managed properly, it would be like Miami. It really would. And it's as beautiful. So tell me about what you do. Do you hang around with mostly South Africans or New Zealanders?
I try and mix it up quite a bit. You always find that you're comfortable around other South Africans, and it's good to sort of be around him. But a lot of the New Zealanders I've sort of made friends with are like really welcoming type people.
Mm.
And, you know, they've opened their homes to us, and we have some really good sort of social times.
Right.
But
you've been there a while now. It's not as if you just got there yesterday. You've been living there some time.
Yeah, and that's sort of what I was sort of wanting to say, like right at the beginning, though, was that
go ahead.
You know, like you often get people who want to sort of jump and go straight into immigrating to New Zealand and Australia for a better life.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is, when you move to a place like New Zealand or Australia, but say for example, I know New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be battling for at least 5 to 7 years before you get on top of things. And I think that's why, like, as you're saying last time, there's a really high divorce rate in New Zealand.
Mm.
The reality is you've got to go through some tough times to get on top of things. You know, like just to put things into a bit more of a context, I stay right on the outskirts of Auckland. It's pretty much as far as you can out of Auckland. And the cheapest house here is $1 million.
Sure.
And, you know, we've actually just managed to buy a house about a year ago, and we had to come up with almost a 20% deposit on $1 million.
Good heavens.
And, you know, like I say, you look at the whole scenario, you've immigrated to New Zealand for a better life, but you've sacrificed so much in the interim. Like we had to, the last 10 years has been a blur because we've been so focused on trying to get our kids into some sort of stable housing that I think we've been in about 5 houses since we've been here, like rentals.
Yeah.
Because we've had to move at various times because the landlords have sold or whatever else. And, you know, like you look back on the whole scenario and obviously you moved for a better outcome, but you've sacrificed a lot. You know what I'm saying? You've lost,
you know,
at least 10 years of your life.
People who are obsessed with equality, and there are lots of those people in the world, they think everything should be equal and fair. And if you're going to use that model, Scandinavian countries and New Zealand and Australia are probably the best models for that in the world. You have some very, very rich people and you have some very, very poor people. But the majority of people in New Zealand and Australia are kind of middle class, right? And they're hardworking, trying to make their living. Nobody's extremely, extremely rich. Like, you know, in South Africa, we have such disparity. Is that to you something that you've picked up, or is that just a perception that people have, or perhaps the economists give us?
No, I think generally the majority of the sort of people that are sort of imported into New Zealand or your foreigners are brought across to be tradespeople. That's why you had to be... I never really worked as an electrician in South Africa, but I had to get my trade qualification to be able to immigrate to New Zealand. So you get paid fairly well as a tradesperson over here, but there's some excessive wealth in New Zealand, and is a definite sort of bottom tier and top tier. The guys on the top tier are living lives that, you know, we could never sort of imagine, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's very, 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 very different, from what we sort of expect from New Zealand.
Do your children even remember life in South Africa, because they were quite young when you left? Are they totally, do they have the, because you, I've noticed you've got the accent. I mean, you've been there long enough to have the accent, but your kids obviously consider themselves New Zealanders, right? Do they support the Bucks? This is a very important question. Somebody asked earlier, do they support the Bucks or do they support the All Blacks? This is hugely important.
I think my kids definitely support the All Blacks. I definitely still support the Bucks. But yeah, I think my daughter, she's been here since she was about 2 years old. She's a full on Kiwi. My son's still really.
Did you just still call your son? What did you call him? A cunt?
How's that for a Freudian slip?
my lips got stuck together.
Sorry, no problem. You can't. Very rude. These New Zealand.
Your daughter is something, but on the other hand,
No. My son's all good.
So your son, how old?
He's 16, and he definitely affiliates a lot of his sort of. He definitely enjoys the South African sort of heritage and sort of follows it through.
Okay.
Like he's got like a South African sticker on the back of his car and whatever else, and all his logos. His motocross bike's got a South African logo, and so
okay,
you know it's. You can't take it away from anyone. You know what I'm saying? We're all born there.
Do you guys ever miss the potholes, the electricity outages, the violent protests over service delivery? Yeah, the stories in the news.
Felicia Mabuza Sattel.
Do you ever miss that stuff? I mean, it's such an important part of being South African. That's Leanne and Bulelo and I wake up every morning. That's what we live for, really.
Yeah. I think with New Zealand, you know, like when you immigrate to a supposedly first world country, your main sort of thing is that you want to be in a place where everything works and everything's, you've got good healthcare, good medical, good schools work, there's no potholes.
Mm-hmm.
But once you actually get it, you realize that everything's very flat. You know what I'm saying? There's actually, and that's sort of what I've sort of come to realize with New Zealand is there's no energy in New Zealand.
Really? Mm. Is that, yeah, the, that's your, flat. That's your takeout.
You know, like say for example, when I used to go through to Anstey's Beach in Durban or Town Beach, and you just sat on the beach, there was energy around you the whole time. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
People were playing music in their cars, and everything was happening. So you definitely felt an energy around you. Now you go through to a beachfront, and it's completely flat.
Wow,
it's really weird. You know, like I was going to say to you, like The funniest thing you ever hear from Kiwis is like, South Africans do it. As soon as you see someone in the morning, you're like, hi, how's it going?
Mm.
And they don't know how to react. And I've often had Kiwis say to me, listen, yeah, stop asking me how I'm doing.
Oh, really? They yeah, don't. What is the appropriate thing to say to fellow New Zealanders, Kiwis, when you see them in the street? What do you do? Ignore them?
Yeah, they'll let you know when they need something from you, and then they'll tell you.
Wow. Jesus, that's odd. And do you agree with what we were discussing the other day about how many Kiwis view South Africans as being arrogant? It's a strange word to use for South Africans, because I always thought the biggest problem with us is that we're too humble.
Yeah, I think I do. But the reality is, as I said, like majority of the people coming from South Africa are like generally highly skilled tradesmen, or they've worked in factories or businesses that are like really on a completely different scale to what any New Zealander could ever imagine. And they've then moved to New Zealand, and they've put in a position where there's maybe 10 people in a factory. And obviously a South African is going to say, listen, yeah, we can do things in completely different ways.
Yeah.
And like streamline things, make things better. And I think that's what's construed as being arrogant. You know what I'm saying?
And
I think a lot of South Africans get frustrated. You know, like you can see things, you can see, listen, yeah, we could do things and make things a lot more efficient.
Yeah.
But the New Zealanders don't want to hear it.
They don't want it. They like that small town kind of mentality, right? I'm just drawing from what you say here. I don't have any preconceived notions. Are there any South Africans who've really made a huge success of themselves in New Zealand, having immigrated somewhere around the time you did? Do you know of South Africans who are just absolutely killing it out there? Because it is hard, as you've said.
I do know personally of quite a few. Majority of them, especially if they'd bought property in New Zealand over 5, 10, 15 years ago,
mm-hmm.
Property prices in New Zealand have sort of doubled in the last 3-4 years. It's absolutely ridiculous. So those guys have done really well for themselves.
Listen.
And Sean, sorry, Sean, if you were, sort of had an entrepreneurial spirit and you said like there's no, New Zealand's quite flat in terms of their lack of energy, but if you were entrepreneurial, would you recommend someone move to New Zealand, or do you think you should rather move there, as you said, to be employed because it's so, it sounds like the thinking is so systemic?
Well, first thing I'd recommend to anyone who's looking at potentially immigrating to New Zealand is if you don't have a clear path to residency, don't even waste your time.
Mm.
You know, there's so many South Africans that come here on a work visa for 2 or 3 years, and I've seen so many and waved goodbye to so many at the airport who have had to go back. You know, like they will utilize their skills as much as they can when they need them. But if they don't need them, you're on a plane back home. So think long and hard before you get in the plane. The next thing is, you know, like as I said, you like we've been here 10 years and we've sort of we battled to get sort of any sort of consistency or any direction for at least 5 to 7 years.
Mm.
We've eventually got over that hurdle now. But like the reality is if I could go back, I don't think I would have made that decision to come to New Zealand. I would have rather have spent that energy trying to make things work in South Africa. And yeah. I think it would have been far more productive. You know, like I think people forget when you get an airplane and we're about 20, 30 hours away from anywhere.
Mm.
You know, like if someone gets sick or something like that, you thought you moved across to New Zealand for a better life, but like people you love are going to die. You know what I'm saying? You're not going to be able to be there. Listen, is it really much of a better place?
It takes a huge.
I feel like crying.
I know, but it takes a huge amount of courage and honesty from you to be able to say that. I know lots of people who've made moves to various places in the world, and look, some of them are very happy and they're thrilled with the decision, and I don't doubt that for a second. But there are others who really regret it, and they can't admit that to themselves, and they spend the rest of their lives just being miserable about it and feeling like regret and, you know, sadness, but they don't ever express it or deal with it. And I think, you know, to look back on it the way that you just have now, and dude, I mean, I'm sure your kids are having a great life. I'm sure they're growing up in a very loving environment with you and your wife. I'm sure that you're doing everything you can to give them the best prospects. And they don't know what they're missing if you had stayed in South Africa. Frankly, you don't either. It might have been a whole lot better. It might have been a whole lot worse. But you made your decisions. The fact that you can look back on it now and go, if I had it all over again, maybe I wouldn't have moved. That's very brave of you to say. Most people are so bad at admitting when they've made a, you know, an error. And I appreciate that about you enormously. That's not why I brought you on the show this morning. I just appreciated your honesty in the letter and now on the email. And now I can see that it carries through into what you're saying as well. I mean, well done. Well done for opening up about that and sharing it with us. Mm. It's a tough thing to do.
Oh, thank you.
What do Kiwis say to you after they break up with each other? I mean, do they go, let's just be cousins?
Oh, my God.
I'd say I'm quite strange. I'm thinking about that. I went, about 4 or 5 years ago, I went through to Invercargill, which is down at the bottom of the South Island.
Yeah.
And I bumped into a couple guys there. And speaking to these guys had never been further than a 200-kilometer radius of Invercargill in their whole lives.
Jeez.
And these guys are like 35 years old. I was like, geez, have you never like just wanted to like, let's jump on a plane, let's go through to Auckland and go and explore, you know what I'm saying?
They've never even left South Island.
They'd never left, been further than 200 kilometers away from where they were born.
Unbelievable.
And how did they respond when you suggested that they should maybe go and see what's happening 300 kilometers away?
Yeah, well, the attitude was, well, they got everything they need right there, so what's the point?
I like it here. I'm not moving. Right. I like it here.
My place like home.
Yeah. Going down the Rotorua, mate. Rotorua. Rotorua. Yeah. I don't need anything else, mate.
In saying that, though, like, you know, like, they are different. It is a different country. You've got to sort of realize, take it into account.
Yeah.
But, you know, but generally they're very friendly people.
Yeah, absolutely.
They may sort of do things differently to us, but you know, like the hospitality we've had, like if anyone's sick or anything like that, the guys are sort of step out of their way to make sure we're all doing all right. You know what I'm saying? So
what's the sense of humor like? Because South Africans are well known for their sense of humor. Australians certainly have a good sense of humor and have always had about themselves. Are New Zealanders good at laughing at themselves, or are they kind of a little more serious? What sort of, is there a national sense of humor? Like you get British comedy shows, you get South African ones. I famously remember Flight of the Conchords as being like a bit of a piss take on New Zealand's culture. But are there more examples you can give us? Do you find people are laughing a lot, or are they quite serious?
Yeah, well, yeah, so you get two different types of New Zealanders. Some that are like really serious and sort of run everything by the book. But, you know, as soon as you find a New Zealander with a sense of humor, you sort of got to grab onto him and say, listen, we're mates, you know what I'm saying? We've got to sort of... we sort of socialize with the guys, and you do find them. They're just far and few between, I suppose. Eh?
And do people really have a lot of sex with sheep? I mean, this is something that it's a huge stereotype. But is it a problem? I mean, are there regular arrests? Do you often look over the neighbor's wall and see them having a go at one of the ewes?
I haven't seen anything in Auckland, but I generally just stay in Auckland, so I can't really comment for the rest of the country.
All right. Well, Michael says, Gareth, I'm from New Zealand, but I've been living in South Africa for 12 years. So he's got the opposite story to you. Yep. He says, I love it here. I love the cheap briarwood, good people, and not having to clean my house on weekends. Well, okay.
Yeah, we don't realize how good you got it in South Africa.
Yeah.
You really don't, eh? You know, like
that's very motivational to fix what's wrong here, you know, because you do get to a point where you feel like, oh boy, we're just going down a slippery slope here. But to hear that gives people here hope.
Yeah, well,
I think New Zealand's got South Africa's got so much potential, and it just needs someone to sort of take it to the next level, someone with real leadership skills to just sort of give people that clarity that things are actually going to work out.
Well, on that note, I mean, the real reason I brought you on the show is because I've got a proposition, and I'd like you to take this to the New Zealand government for me. I want to give you a Jacob Zuma. You can give us a Jacinda Ardern, and we'll just swap them from one state prison facility to another, and no one will even really pick up any difference. But I'm willing to give Jacinda a try over here. Are you guys at all keen? Because it seems like a lot of her policies are very unpopular. We can do it tomorrow if you like.
Yeah, no problem.
All right.
I think he's, Jacob Zuma will sort of give some sort of humor into
Parliament. He'll inject some craziness.
Bring some humor into.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. He'd make a difference.
You know, having
bad difference, yeah. But he'd make a difference.
Sean, having said that, due to the current state, you would need to pay for Jacob Zuma's flight, because if you haven't heard, he's come upon difficult times. Yeah, there's a GoFundMe if you. Yeah.
Oh, I'm
yeah.
sure we can sponsor him, eh?
All right. Well, listen, dude, it's an absolute pleasure to speak to you. And thanks for sending me that email. I'm just thrilled when we can get to speak to people from all over the world and have their own experiences told in their own words on the show. It makes a hell of a lot of difference. And it's way better than us trying to divine what people think and how they feel. And listen, good luck to you and your family, and lots of love from South Africa. All right.
Great stuff. Thanks for the chat, guys. It was awesome talking to you guys.
Good to see you, man. Well, speak to you. Thanks so much. Cheers, Sean.
Sorry about the camera.
No worries. No worries, mate. No worries. Oh. Very good. What a cool guy. Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
Very, yeah.
Candle. I always appreciate candle in people.
Is that
a
town in South Island?
Oh, yeah. That's Canadore, mate. Easy mistake.
Okay.
Easy mistake. Okay. That's Canadore.
Anyway,
we did get a New Zealand town. Name.
Yes,
to us.
I'm not even going to try and say chat. It. Let me just show you this, because this is unbelievable. A legit New Zealand place name is Tauma Wakanada Hanga Kautana Ona Mota Puka Pika Mawa Honoruk Upuka Wenok Kitanahu. No, if that's and that's just how that's just and apparently that's just how you know you, that's how you say hello to someone in the mornings.
Yeah.
That's why you can't
if
say
you if you translate it, it's just George.
Oh, there he is. George. Well done. There's George. George Meany. That would be your name.
Hi, George.
Borge. That would be your name in New Zealand, George. That's your name in New Zealand. Isn't that great?
Well, I mean, I've got a lot of names, and that even trumps it.
Okay. George, what's happening Friday morning?
Friday morning, yes, and it's dark and gloomy outside in Joburg, and you know, apparently it's supposed to be cold this weekend.
I know, Leanne keeps telling me that. She loves a good news story.
Mark my words.
Oh my god. Doom and gloom from Leanne.
I saw this one news report to say that there was snow coming, and you know, I don't know, but I hope it doesn't snow. But if it does snow, well, just have to deal with it, I suppose. Talking about going to New Zealand, I was one of, I think we were about 8 or 9 cousins in my family. Mm-hmm. I was one of 2 that didn't skip the country.
Oh, really? The rest when went.
The rest went. England, Australia, Dubai. The rest went. Mm-hmm. And, I can attest to the stories, not personally, but from hearsay. And it takes a long time. My opinion is once a foreigner, always a foreigner.
That's interesting.
Amen.
George, I think it takes a lot of effort, energy, acclimatization. You really have to work hard at it if you're going to make it happen for you. And for a young family, I think it's a lot easier. If you're slightly older, I think it's damn hard. And I don't see as many positives as negatives for me. I mean, certainly for other people, I'll let you make your own decisions. But I think it is tough. That's why it's so nice to speak to Sean and to have his honesty this morning. And how are your cousins doing? I mean, compared to you, they're obviously terrible losers, but, you know.
all but 2 of them have come back.
That's interesting.
Wow.
Right.
I mean, they didn't do too badly for themselves, especially if you stay in a one-bedroom apartment for like 2 decades. Mm-hmm. You can bring a foreign currency back. But but all but 2 of them have come back.
Okay.
The 2 that haven't come back are in Australia.
Right. I mean, you know, let's just take it seriously and get into motoring now for a second. But Elon is God says, South Africa is the only place where you can pull off to the side of the road, take a piss, and the cops drive right by. That's true. I see people taking a piss all the time on the side of the road. That is true freedom.
But it's very true freedom. But please, people, if you want to take a pee on the side of the road, find a tree or a bush or something. I don't want to see what belt you have on.
Yeah, exactly. All right. What do you got for us this morning, George?
Anyway, so talking about Elon Musk, funny that he's on the show, but talking about Elon Musk, mm-hmm. I don't know if you heard, but they're building a humanoid robot.
Yes, I saw the pictures of this thing. I don't know if those are the pictures of the actual robot, but you know, it looks like some sort of sci-fi Will.i.am iRobot type thing.
Now, Elon Musk has always touted the fact that AI is probably one of the most, in his words, existential threats to humanity, you know, right. Besides an asteroid or one of those. And computers could, or AI could effectively be harmful. And it's funny that now, you know, he's building a humanoid robot. But I suppose they can, because the Tesla system has artificial intelligence with neural nets. And they say that they're building a robot so that you can run away from it, so you can run faster than it, and you can overpower it. And it is 5'8" tall.
Wow.
Wow.
I want to be able – I think it's very important to be able to overpower your robot. Very important.
Yes.
Very. And run away from it. I mean, the fact that he says you can be able to run away from it worries me.
No, I don't want I don't want my
robot
to be
strong. Like if that's inserted
strong.
In the design features from the beginning, then it's a little bit worrying.
No, it's got to be. It's got to be. You've got to be able to assert your dominance over your robot. I mean, some people can't even do this with their pets. Some people struggle to do this with their children. And you know what it does? It creates monstrous pets and undesirable children. You need to be able to assert your dominance over your robot, too. You punch that thing in the face if it misbehaves.
I'd go further. It creates undesirable adults.
Yeah, well, that's also true. All right, so Elon's busy building robots, but is he still paying attention to Tesla? Because we can't let him get distracted. He's very ADHD, and if he doesn't pay attention, we're going to have problems.
Exactly. So I'm pretty sure he's going to be paying attention to Tesla, because I mean, his two main companies are SpaceX and Tesla. Yeah. He started that brain company, Neuralink.
Neuralink,
yeah, that inserts wires into your brain to try and solve things or cure things like Alzheimer's or motor neurons disease. And he's not very involved there, and he's also bought SolarCity, which he wasn't involved in, and then he gave away the patents to the that tunnel, that bullet train tunnel.
The Boring Company.
No, not the Boring Company. The Boring Company drills the holes, but the actual concept of the train inside the tunnel in a vacuum. So he's done a lot of things, but I think his focus does stay with Tesla and SpaceX.
Well, here, when Staring Pikachu says Tesla just launched the Pollard in the States, it can do a quarter mile in 9 seconds. That's Bugatti speed. How's that?
It's actually called the Plaid, Plaide. The Tesla Plaid, and if you get your reaction times right, it can do 0 to 100 kilometers an hour in under 2 seconds. In perspective.
I mean, I remember the AC Cobra was 3 seconds, and that blew my mind.
It's really fast. I've been watching some drag races with this Plaid, and it just annihilates everything, absolutely everything in its path. It's got 3 electric motors, not 2. Most of the Teslas from before have had 2 electric. It's got 3 electric motors. Whereas Porsche, on the other hand, the Porsche Taycan, has a gearbox. So 2 electric motors with a gearbox. So they've got a different design. Tesla's now put 3 motors in, no gearbox.
Well, we've been talking to BMW, and we've got another episode coming up on Tuesday, I think, next week, about their electric car range. And I'm sure that'll be interesting to you too, George. I know you pay attention to EVs. That's one of your areas of real interest. But what else have you got for us this morning?
So in America, no doubt, in Greenville, North Carolina, as a matter of fact, a man had a C8 Corvette, a 2020 Chev Corvette Stingray, which is quite a sought-after car. They never made many of these. So he goes on, he sells the car for a healthy profit.
Yeah.
Decides the day before he's supposed to deliver the car, let me take one more joyride in my Corvette Stingray. Takes the on-ramp to the highway, loses control, and rolls the car and writes it off. And then gets a fine from the police for admitting that he gunned it on the entrance to the highway.
I saw a thing someone sent me on WhatsApp yesterday of some dude. He bought a car, a fancy Ferrari or something. I'm going to see if I can't put this up on the screen for you. And then in the next frame, they show you how he's crashed it into a wall. It's just unbelievably stupid. You know, the kind of thing that just makes you think, some people, doesn't matter how much money they have, they're still morons. Anyway, let me get that while you tell us the next story.
Some people can't handle the power of some of these cars. I mean, I would shudder to think of putting a teenager, 18, 19, 20 year old inside a Tesla Plaid. It's going to go wrong. It's definitely going to go wrong. But, once upon a time, we spoke about, awesome car technologies that never took off.
Yeah.
And the list has kind of grown. Apparently, in 1946, a magazine by the name of Modern Mechanics wrote a story about a concept called rocket brakes. This was an actual thing,
yes.
Rocket brakes. So there would be a rocket facing the opposite direction to the direction of the car. And if you really wanted to stop in a hurry, you would turn on these rocket brakes, which apparently had 2 G's of stopping. The trouble with these rocket brakes is if anybody got in front of the car, they would be toasted immediately, and the tanks to hold the propellant would be the same as about 7 fuel tanks full of fuel in the car.
It's a terrible idea.
And also your windscreen would need to be made of cotton wool, because you're probably going to throw yourself through it a few times with rocket brakes.
Exactly. So rocket brakes. The other thing is gullwing doors. So gullwing doors have been around for decades. Some Mercedes-Benz have them. It's the supercars mainly have them.
Right.
And in the specific case of the Nissan NX21, which was revealed in 1983 with gullwing doors. Mm-hmm. And gullwing doors have never really taken off in the mainstream. And the main reason for that is because of the complicated mechanics of making gullwing doors. The only company that's really got what they call their Falcon doors right is the Tesla Model X, but it was the sole thing that delayed the launch of the Tesla Model X was the design of those doors, those gullwing doors that can open on the sides of the car.
Okay. Can I show you,
George? What do you call those doors on a Bentley? So sometimes I go to this restaurant and there's this classic Bali who pitches up there with his wife, probably late 70s, 80s. He's just classic. This guy, the Bentley that's got the umbrella in the door with those fat wheels. The classic. I don't know what is that. You'll know what. What do you call those doors? Because they don't just open. Is you've got to open both doors like almost like you're opening a cupboard. The one I'm talking about.
They open the opposite way, yeah. I don't know if they've got a name, but I know exactly what you mean. It opens the opposite way, and it's designed so that, the rich and famous can get into the car without having to duck and avoid the door as it's as it's going.
That's very civilized.
Yeah. I think they're called cupboard doors.
Cupboard
door.
All right, so look at this quickly. Here's a guy who bought a fancy Ferrari. Here's the picture of him on social media. It says, "What dreams are made of. Congratulations, Mr. Y." And there he is in a pimp jacket with a pimp hat on, standing in front of his Ferrari. And this is the video of what happened just a short while after he bought that. Look at this. This is great. There he is.
That's this.
And there's the car. See that? Straight through a wall, about 20 minutes after he'd bought it. Dumbass. Isn't that great? So you drove it straight through a wall. Beautiful. Well done, you idiot.
I mean, so, oh God.
Isn't that awful? I mean, the guy in the pimp, like, we should have known by the way he was wearing that fur jacket and the fur hat in South Africa that he was a complete asshole and he was going to trash his car like that. Very good. Great move, dummy.
Accelerators are not a switch.
All right. So somebody says here those are called suicide doors. Someone else says they're called French doors.
Yeah, suicide doors. I've heard that before. I don't know if there's an official name, but I've heard those before.
No, but the suicide doors go up. The ones I'm talking about. The
gullwing doors.
Mm. Oh, is that gullwing?
Yes, that's gullwing doors.
And so, the one, okay.
Yeah, suicide doors, French doors, I think they're all applicable, but they're designed for the rich and famous to get into the car easily.
All right, George, anything else?
Yes, turbine engines. So also a technology that never took off. Turbine engines, and the reason they never took off, I mean, turbine engines are the engines like the ones on big jet aircraft. And it's because of the delay in power in the turbine engine. I mean, it's much more powerful than a regular engine, but when you start, throttling up the turbine engine, it takes a while to gain momentum, and that's the reason it didn't take off. There were some cars that were designed with turbine engines but never took off. And then finally, another technology that never took off was steam engine cars. Believe it or not, steam engine cars have their roots in the 1670s.
Wow, that's a long time ago.
And there was a Stanley steamer that could do 200 k's an hour in 1906.
Okay. But sure. But we don't use steam cars anymore, George, right? I mean, I haven't seen one on the roads for a while. It would be hard to get the boiler in the car working quickly enough.
And you'd need somebody to shovel coal.
Yeah, right? You need a person.
A stoker.
That's what it's called, yeah. And then very finally, Gareth, the grace period for expired vehicle license discs and licenses comes to an end. Sorry, the grace period comes to an end at the end of August.
Well, I can't get an appointment, Fikile. So guess what? You're just going to have to find me.
So exactly. So while the grace period comes to an end, there are still some serious issues at the licensing departments. And so we can probably expect some long queues in the next couple of days, including, you know, people that are driving around without licenses. So big problems in that area, I think.
Well, to finish off the show this morning, especially for those people who like and subscribe and comment on YouTube, and I've been telling you for a while, it's worth your while to do this. Here is a watermelon pizza to look at. Just in case you needed to see what
the looked
like. Here it is, a watermelon pizza. Just in case you weren't sure what it is, now you know.
That's porco miseria.
All right.
All that is holy.
Horrendous. Okay, everybody, have a happy weekend. We will see you on Monday at 6 o'clock. Thank you, George. Thank you, Leanne. Thank you, Mbulelo. Most especially, thank you to you. Have a good time. See you later. CliffCentral.com.